Hello, I'm Elena Del Valle, and this is the HispanicNPR.com podcast. My guest today is Roger Mort, Chief Operating Officer of Packaging and Crating Technologies, PACT. We will discuss safe recycling tips. Roger brings 38 years of green packaging experience to his position, initially starting out as an hourly employee and working his way through the ranks of supervisor, plant manager, to COO and partner. His specialty is designing cost-effective, patented crating solutions like lift vans and pleat wrap, as well as custom packaging for the aerospace, medical, electronics, tooling, machinery, furniture, fine art, and automotive sectors. He is responsible for the company's newest invention, ThermoShield, a sustainable paper-based packaging material that suppresses and controls lithium-ion battery fires by mitigating thermal runaway. Under his direction, the company is a current member of the Commercial Relocation Network, the Council on Safe Transportation of Hazardous Materials, and the International Association of Movers. It is also a preferred vendor for the United States Department of Defense and has been awarded a special permit from the United States Department of Transportation for the shipping of lithium-ion batteries, as well as pass the proposed SAE G27 test standard. Roger, welcome.
Thank you for having me.
Let's start with something really simple. What do we mean when we say recycling? Is there a standard definition for recycling?
Well, yeah, recycling to most people means you throw it into a unit and it goes somewhere and they turn it back into what it is. We are packaging. We make it so that the moment we're thinking about your problem and the thing that you're trying to solve, the damages or whatever, we want to make sure that when you're done using our products, they can go right back into the waste stream as recycled, be turned back into another green product.
A lot of people, certainly individual consumers, think that recycling is just putting things in the recycling bin by their curb or in their building. But it's a lot more involved than that, right? It depends on the material that you're trying to recycle. Would you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, if you're recycling plastic, glass, cardboard, stuff like that, you pile it into your blue dumpster or green dumpster at the house, put it out by the curb, and they take it and they sort it for you. Some folks will throw lithium batteries or other batteries into these dumpsters thinking they're recycling them. That just is completely dangerous because the trucks that pick these things up generally will compact them as they're going down the road. And batteries do not like to be hit and banged around. They can become a fireball in no time.
Recycling then is very material specific, and lithium ion batteries are very different from, say, cardboard or plastic.
Yeah, you can do anything you want to cardboard, plastic. All you're going to do is break it down and it'll just go into the recycling stream anyway if it's torn or broken. As to where lithium batteries, once they get beat around a little bit, they heat up and they explode and light everything on fire that we're talking about.
Which is really scary sounding. So this is the type of battery that we've seen in the news relating to a number of electronics and e-scooters and electric bicycles, right?
Yeah, pretty much anything you've bought in the last 3 years, if you're plugging it in to recharge it, it's got about 98% chance of being lithium inside.
Now, some things seem to be much more volatile from that perspective. So we see, for example, lawnmowers that are prone or capable of catching fire, vehicles, electric vehicles. For a while, there were scooter shops that were catching fire. Why is it that some items are more prone to catching fire than others? Say, for example, we don't hear very often about phones and tablets catching fire, or it seems to me we don't.
Well, it all depends on the media and what they want to tell you today, really. Because the way most people are starting to find out about the real dangers is, like, say, New York City. The firemen's union started putting up the actual lithium battery fires on their website just from e-bikes. And last year they had over 4,000 different fires, 167 people hurt, 13 people killed, and this is just e-bikes going off. And it has nothing to do with the item. It has to do with the lithium. The most common used cell, picture the AA battery that you see in the packs at the store. It's just a hair bigger than that, but when you talk about like the lawnmower, well, inside the main battery, which it'll have 180 of these little cells. All you need is one to go rogue. And, you know, I'd like to say that it takes a lot to make one go rogue, but brand new ships of brand new batteries coming across the ocean, one out of every 10 cargo ships has a fire on board because of lithium batteries in a container. Lithium's volatile and it can go off on its own, or it can be abused and make it go off. So it's just a matter of how, when, and whether it gets publicized or not.
I'm hearing you say that there are a lot of fires happening with everyday items and we're just not hearing about it?
Yeah, like right now, we just did a big test out in Oregon, and when I was talking to the head of the Firefighters Association out there, he was like, you know what the last three big fires were that actually burned down three homes in this county? And I'm like, nope. And he's like, children's toys. I'm like, oh. He's like, yeah. They were all the same kind of toy, all just the kids plugged them in and just left them plugged in for a day or two. And then all of a sudden, the family wakes up to the house burning to the ground. And it's just a little cell inside that went off.
And those are the same lithium ion batteries that we're talking about?
Yep. See, everybody says battery, and like, so, say your cell phone. Your cell phone has a flat battery in there, and it, those cells, when they go off, let's say you drop it on the ground, or it starts to go rogue, you'll feel your phone like super hot. Let's say it's about 110 degrees. You're like, oh. Well, you've probably got anywhere from 5 to 45 minutes before that phone explodes. Shoots up a 2-foot flame that's burning at 800 degrees. So if it's on your counter, your cabinets go up. If it's in your bed being charged and it goes off, you may not be up the next morning. They just don't like to be hit. They don't like to be overcharged. And when they do get to the point where they're going rogue and they finally go, it's just a mess. Some of the cases, like a cell phone, there's going to be toxic gases. Tablets, laptops, toxic gases. You get a breath of them, you're probably going to have COPD the rest of your life. You get like an e-bike battery goes off in your living room, and by the time you get out there, it's exploding in every direction. You breathe that gas, you're probably just going to fall to the ground and be dead because it's that toxic.
Is there a relationship between the age of the product and the time at which these batteries are likely to overheat and blow up?
In some of the information you get from different agencies, there's a direct correlation to how old the thing is. A lot of times, from the stuff I get from different fire companies and all, it's really the conditions and how you use it, not how old it is, because the thing could be brand new. And say a laptop. Most people don't know that the laptop has two batteries in it, and they're very powerful. And they go to bed, and they plug it in, and they do some work. Well, the cooling unit under a laptop is at the bottom. So if you have it and you set it onto a hard surface and it's still plugged in, it's breathing. It's cooling off these batteries all night long. Well, if you just drop it on your pillow next to your comforter, you've shut off the air circulation to the cooling units, and the batteries are heating up as you're sleeping. And hopefully it's a new enough laptop that has a safety thing in it that can shut the laptop charging off. But in a lot of cases, it's not. And people, you know, wake up, and if they're lucky, they get out of the room. A lot of times you don't. because the thing has went off.
So you're saying a lot of people go to sleep with their laptops on their bed?
Yeah, they're charging them and they just set it off to the side and go to sleep, and you cut off the cooling fans and nothing good happens after that.
What is the safe place to charge, or is there a safe place to charge your laptop, tablet, phone?
So this is my personal opinion because these things scare the hell out of me, is I do not charge them when I'm sleeping. I charge them when I'm working during the day or when I'm traveling in my car so that I can witness, because the thing will get hot, first of all. But should it start to go on a thermal runaway, you'll hear a psht, and that's the battery lets gas out into the air so that it can collect oxygen and suck back in. And that's when you get the explosion. It needs oxygen to go inside that battery to start the explosion process. So I absolutely do not charge any of my stuff at night. I charge it during the day. If I do plug in something, like I have a lot, our company here, we have a lot of power tools with those big battery packs on them because we build crating and such. We know we plugged it in, that this thing should take 2.5 hours to charge. We make sure we unplug it. And before we go home, they're all unplugged so that should something happen, there's at least somebody in the area that can hear the noises, see the smoke, and make sure that we put it into a container and put it someplace safe so we don't burn the building down.
This is starting to sound very unsettling. What about all these people who are charging bigger things like lawnmowers and lawn blowers and bicycles and cars? What do you do then?
I don't own any of those things because I've seen this. Like, my son went out and bought a brand new pickup truck 6 months ago, 8 months ago. It was electric, half gas. And I'm like, after you've been to a lot of these tests and you've seen all these things coming across from the National Firemen's Association and the National Arsons Association, who investigates these things, I says, why would you ever buy an electric truck? And he's like, well, it's a one in a million chance. And then was about 3 weeks ago, I come in and I see a brand new truck sitting here, and I'm like, you got a brand new truck, huh? Diesel. He goes, yep, gonna be honest with you, I was driving down the highway the other day with the electric truck, it just wouldn't get out of, like, it was in first gear, and then all of a sudden the whole truck just shut down in the middle of the highway, people barely missed hitting me, and a couple seconds later it started back up and went to 60 miles an hour. And I was like, oh. He goes, yep, I'm not driving an electric truck anymore. I'm like, okay, good move. Good move.
So, the safety tip for our listeners who are listening for safe recycling tips, the safety tip I'm hearing is for those big items, just stay away from them if you can. For the smaller items, don't leave them on overnight.
You got to really treat it like it's glass. Like, you can't smack it around. You can't leave it sitting on somewhere alone. You got to be keeping an eye on this thing because you just don't know. And, from what I gather, there's millions upon millions of cases where nothing ever happens to people. But I got to tell you, when you see the results of what does happen, like last year, there was a fire in New York City because one of these bike shops was charging batteries in their facility, and it went off. It burned the entire neighborhood down, including a food store.
Well, that was
And
the
it hurt
next question
two or
that I
three
was going to
firemen.
ask you. Maybe you are very careful and you don't have any of these things, or you don't charge them at night, as you're saying, and everything goes well. But what happens if your neighbor in the apartment next door, or the business next door, or the house next door has one or more of these things? What can you do to be safe?
When the fire starts, get out. I mean, there's a case down in Houston a few years ago where the car caught fire in the garage. The firemen came, and there's no way to put them out yet. Okay? So the firemen come, they put like 30,000 gallons of water onto this car over the course of like 28 hours, I think it was. But the cells I was describing to you, in some cars, there's like 10,800 of them under the floor. they were going off, and they shoot, when they go off, it's liquid cobalt surrounded by liquid copper in all different directions with the force of like a 410 shotgun shell. So these things will go through walls of a garage into the neighbor's house. They were there pumping that 30,000 gallons on there, but they still lost the house that the car was in, plus both neighbors' houses caught on fire because of these shooting projectiles. So you just, when that stuff happens, go, because the gases that come off of a burning car, you only need one breath and you're done.
If you have any hint that it's heating up, if you hear hissing sounds, anything that makes you uneasy, just run
get
out
away,
of your
call
house.
911. Yeah, get away, call 911. So, and unfortunately, the firemen right now, they don't have things to be able to put these lithium batteries out. So in most cases, they pump water on them and let it burn for anywhere up to 36 hours. Now, we had a bus in Connecticut here 2 years ago. The bus caught fire. One cell went off, started setting the rest of the cells off. I think there's more than 25,000 of these cells in the back of the bus in these batteries. And the thing burned for 36 hours. Two of the workers were hurt. A couple firemen were hurt trying to put it out, and there's nothing they can do. So just once it goes, get away, call the authorities, and let them do what they can. I mean, we just invented a fire extinguisher, and we've been through 26 tests now, and it shuts off in every incident the entire lithium fire instantly and keeps it out. Because what happens a lot of times, like the fireman we lost down in Newark, New Jersey last year, all these cars were on the boat going over to Africa, and on the manifest, they didn't realize it said lithium or recycled lithium cars. So even if they get the fire to go out, or for some reason the fire goes out, you still have thousands of cells still 100% state of charge. And a week later, a month later, they just go off again, because once they're compromised, they're compromised. And the poor fireman went down to, I think it was level 12 on the ship, before they realized they were electric cars, and it got so hot that two of the firemen were never found. You know, these things will burn at 5,000 degrees if they're open burn.
What do you do when there's no way out? Like, say, an airplane or on a ship, on a boat, on a cruise ship? All of these places are carrying batteries. They're ubiquitous.
Yep. Well, we lost three boats in the last 4 years because of new cars and used cars being transported across the oceans. And the cars will burn so hot and the fire will be so hot that it will literally go through the hull of the boat and sink the boat. You know, there's, you know, the FAA and all these guys, airlines, they have these bags now that you can, you know, if you report the things going off, like it starts to smoke, they shove it in a bag, they pour water into the bag, and they emergency land as quickly as they can. And hopefully they get down to the ground quick enough to allow everybody to get off without breathing in that stuff.
Wow.
We actually have a patent on a paper. So inside every big battery case, there's hundreds of these little cells, sometimes thousands of little cells. So if you take one layer of our TR sleeve, which is coated with ink, and wrap it around each of those cells, in every test we've ever done, you set off one cell, it starts to cool everything in the area down to 60 degrees. Well, the other cells can be affected by heat. So when this thing goes off, the other ones don't even know there's a fire inside the case. So they just sit there, and the fire, there's never an explosion. There's never a big fire because it's one cell, and it's done in anywhere from 10 to 15 seconds. So that would save a lot of these fires from even happening. We have a couple of e-bike battery companies who are now just wrapped all their cells, sent us the batteries for photo pics and all, and now we're going to take them to an accredited lab and put in a heat stick to set off one cell and prove to the world that the rest of the cells, even though they're 100% state of charge, they didn't get involved in the fire.
What should you do with your devices if you, I guess, I mean, the first reaction when I'm hearing you describe this is, we're not really talking about recycling. We're talking about not having these, if in any way you can, such as the big items that we talked about. Most people that are listening to us probably can't live and work without some form of portable electronic device. Being tethered to a building has become very difficult. If you don't have a device, you can't work, right? So
yes,
what is the safest way? Is there some sort of a carrying case?
No. I mean, you're going to use them. You're going to know when the thing's about to go rogue. It's going to get hot. If it's at that point, you want to move it to a safe place, sidewalk, outside, you know, and call 911 and have the firemen come, and they can make it safe enough so that it burns off and nobody gets, you know, the smoke in their face and, you know, and take care of it. If you're just getting rid of the item because, you know, you want the new phone 14 instead of the 13, take it. Don't throw it in it. Never, ever throw them in the trash, because when your trash pickup happens, they dump it into the back of the truck. The truck's ram comes and crushes up so they can get to all the different neighborhoods without, you know, having to unload the truck. Well, when it gets hit by that ram, now you've damaged the item, the cell. When that goes rogue, it's going to start that whole trash truck on fire. And one of the local, they're national, they have a policy. If you're driving a truck down the road and the back of the truck starts smoking, unless you're in a school area, just open the back, dump it right on the road, and call 911 and get the trash truck at least a couple hundred yards away from it. Let the firemen come and deal with this thing. So, but never, ever, ever throw them in the trash. Almost every county, town, they have a recycling program where there's a place you can take these old phones, old vacuums, the old power tool batteries, and you go there and they have different dumpsters for them. They're all steel, and then they take them to a place, and there's professionals who basically, you know, if it's a laptop or a cell phone, they'll go in, they'll take the gold out of it, which is very expensive, and they can make money off it. But they'll get the batteries and look at them and test them. If they test them and they test out to be okay and the power is low, they'll take them and just put them into these big bins, and they'll go to a recycling plant. If they test them and they can't tell whether the thing's got power or not, or they see bulging, that's a big thing. Like, I was just talking to a couple this weekend. They're like, yeah, we're thinking about getting my mom a new laptop because it's actually bulged a half inch. I'm like, you need to get that out of her house immediately and get it to a facility who can take care of this for you. And the guy was like, really? I'm like, the moment these batteries start to bulge, that means they're going to go into thermal runaway and explode. And you don't know whether that's one day or 100 days. And he's like, oh, yeah, we're going to go buy a laptop today and take it to the county facility. They'll get it, wrap it up safely in some of our thermal shield, or sometimes they'll use other people's products. And then they get it to ship it to places like in Nevada. There's Redwood, who's like one of the biggest recyclers. These folks are professionals. They know how to deal with these things, and they know how to safely get them into what we call a beater. There's these machines that once you get the batteries free, it goes into this machine, it gets ground down until it turns into like this black sand. And then they get all the metal impurities from the casing out of it. And that black sand, they can actually use it and put it back into a lithium battery as a component and start the whole process over again.
Now, you said that normally you can tell because the batteries will get hot, or they'll make sounds, or they'll get misshapen. But if you've got a laptop and you leave it in your office, if you have several laptops, a lot of people have more than one device, and you're not there, then it sounds like that's a risky situation.
Oh, yeah. It's just like rolling the dice at the casino. You don't know. I mean, you have a 1 in 10 million chance that it might go wrong, but you got the rest of the 10 million chance that it'll go right. You just don't know. That's why we have insurance, and, you know, things are put to get building back together when the building disappears. Like, there's a big fire. I think it's out now. I got to check with a friend of mine. But over a month ago, a recycling facility caught fire out in Missouri, and it was burning 27 days later because, from what I gathered, there was 80 tons of these batteries sitting there.
Well, and I was just going to ask you, when you talked about these professionals that do this, doesn't that just concentrate the risk of a fire that you can't put out?
Yes, yes. That's why we're getting calls left and right from firemen and everybody to quickly get our fire extinguishing agent on the market. We're working with a couple of companies, one who wants to build, they already do build, stuff for airplanes and like the fire suppression equipment that if something happens in this one little part, it'll, you know, get some halon, which is a gas, but that doesn't put out lithium batteries. So they want to take our agent and put it in there. Everybody who's working professionally with these things respects the energy that they have and the things that could go wrong. But you're always taking a chance.
What about other materials aside from the lithium ion batteries? What issues do we need to be aware of when we're looking at recycling cardboard, glass, plastic? What are the issues that apply?
There really are no issues. I would just say, you know, think about the person who's got to sort this stuff. You know, a lot of people will send their plastic bottles still half full of whatever was in them, you know, and with the cap on. Well, there's somebody at the other end, usually like 14 people on a line, going through and pulling that stuff out. Now they got to dump and get rid of it and, you know, just finish off the product, put it in the thing, and, you know, the proper people should take care of it, you know. But just don't send a corrugated box that's, you know, covered in all kinds of food, you know, because you're just going to cause rats at their area and everything. If it's completely damaged and it's got a bunch of oil all over it, you got to put it in there. They'll take care of it. They'll handle it differently. But it's just, you know, put it in there as clean as possible. Give the people a chance to do their job.
There's been a lot of reports about how, especially when it comes to plastic, the vast majority, I think one of the ones that I saw recently said that 98% of plastic was not being recycled, specifically in the U.S. Is that true?
I can only go by what I read, and that's what, you know, some of these agencies are saying. And I do know you drive down the roads in certain cities and certain areas, and it's all over the side of the road and everything. And I'd like to think that somebody's cleaning it up and recycling it. But, you know, unfortunately, everybody knows what to do, and it just depends on whether they're going to follow it.
What I mean is not necessarily that people are not putting it in recycling bins, but that once the municipalities gather the plastic, they don't have any way to recycle it, that there is no effective way to recycle the plastic. So most of it is just being stored or put in landfills.
Oh, I could believe that with certain municipalities, because one I used to live in, it was, I would look and the recycle truck was the trash truck, and they would be dumping them both in the same truck. And there's nobody sorting through trash to get to a piece of plastic. In a lot of cases, and I thought this was being addressed by each county and each government, but, you know, there's plenty of money available to come up with these things and get them to be recycled. But a lot of times, I guess they're just trying to save a buck.
The report that I saw was that the costs of recycling efficiently were so high that there was no way to recoup them. There was no way to take that plastic and make it into something that was usable without a very high cost. So that brings us back to the question, does it make any sense for people to go to all the trouble of segregating their garbage and putting plastic aside if the plastic is not being recycled?
Well, I'm always going to tell them to keep doing their best to do it. I mean, it's like everything. The cost isn't worth it, and people don't do it. Like, we're a green packaging company since 2005. And some big corporations are like, we're going green. And we end up saving them money on the front half. We end up saving them money while they're shipping their products all over the world. And then it's 100% recyclable at the end. But then you see they didn't change over and use our stuff, and they're still doing the same old thing. And it's just like, why? Well, our people don't want to use this. They think it's cheap. Well, I got, thousands of customers who've been using it since 2005, 2008, and they're making money off of the thing, and they just, it's a mindset with a lot of companies. So they just, some are going to change, some aren't. And the people, the individuals, I mean, you don't know whether your municipality's doing it right or not. You just got to do your part and put it in the right bin, make sure it gets to them. And then, check it out, find out, ask the local trash people, hey, what are you doing with this stuff when you get it to the other end? And then puts some pressure back on the officials who, you elected and say, hey, what happened here? We're doing all this stuff and it's just a waste of time, or, force them to give you an answer.
What happens to the paper? You were talking about not putting oil-soaked or dirty cardboard in the recycling bins. Tell us a little bit about that process, if you would.
Well, so if it goes in and it's just a clean corrugated box or, some paper or whatever, they just take it and they send it up the chute. It goes into a baler. It gets turned into like a 2,000-pound bale. And then they fill up a truck with like 45,000 pounds of it a week. And it just goes right back. Paper is one of the easiest things to recycle if it's clean and, properly disposed of, because that bale just goes to this mill. There's a big, like 30-foot-wide tank full of molten. It looks like lava, but it's molten paper. And they just kick these bales in there. The paper just turns back into a liquid form of this pulp. And then the wires that were around the bale get taken out by this big magnet. And it goes right back into a machine. Becomes, most of the time, it'll go into becoming toilet paper or secondary products. A lot of times, big mills will use it to make that center paper. Like if you ever look at the edge of a box, you see the ripples in the center that gives you the strength. There's a lot of plants in the country that are plants that turn that back into 100% recycled sheet, because you're not printing on that surface. But it can be properly disposed of pretty easily. As far as the ones that come out with like the oil on it, or sometimes people will try to cheat the process to make their bales heavier and they put stone dust in there or something, that stuff gets put off to the side. And I'm pretty sure they send that to an incinerator plant, one of these trash to steams, and they just burn it in there and make energy out of it.
Does cardboard release methane?
That's a good question. If you were burning it, it probably burns off just as clean as wood, but I'm sure there's some type of gases that are coming off of it.
As say that it's decomposing, it's wet or it's breaking down in a landfill, is that contributing to the methane, the landfill methane?
That I'm not 100% sure of. I have a high school diploma. I've never been a scientist, so I learn from asking questions, and that's one of the questions I've never asked anybody.
What about water? What is the role of water in this recycling process?
Well, other than rinsing things off and all, the paper, it's basically being boiled again in water, but the water's being used in many different ways at a paper mill. They pretty much, the newer paper mills that are doing this recycling have a zero carbon footprint. Nothing comes out. Everything's used in this recycling process. It's really clean process nowadays.
And the water that's used in the process, is that clean water? Can they reuse it?
Yeah, most likely they're rinsing it off with just town water. It's going down to the recycle plant or the wastewater plant and being, you know, cleaned off. They go ahead and put in some flock and bring all the impurities down to the bottom, and then that stuff is taken and dried and then sent off to landfills a lot of times, special landfills, to put it back into the ground so it doesn't harm the waste or the, what do you call it, area water, the groundwater.
There's also a lot of talk lately, and I'm not sure if this falls within our topic area, but there's been a lot, an increasing amount of discussion about recycling water, the water itself that is coming into people's homes, into business taps, is being recycled. Does that fall under our conversation?
I don't know, but that sounds disgusting to me. I thought they were just using new groundwater and making sure it was pure and everything. I never thought about them because, I mean, so many bad things go down the drains of, you know, from restaurants and people's houses and everything. I can't imagine getting that clean enough to send it right back through to drinking, but who knows nowadays? I mean, I have one customer who builds these huge plants, and several of them are on the West Coast right now, where you can pump the ocean water through these specialized silver filters and turn it into pure drinking water.
What happens to the salt?
They take it and they put it on barges and things, and they sell it to these municipalities to put on your roads during the winter up north here.
At least all the parts are getting used. So a lot of the talk when they used to talk about desalinization, they were taking the extra salt that they took out of the water and dumping it back in the ocean.
Yeah. Now, nowadays, they've gotten it to a process that they can basically sell it to folks for the salt to put on your steps and municipalities to put it on the roads. So I don't know what they do with it during the summer months when everybody doesn't need that. Maybe they're stockpiling it. You know, there's always a cost and effect. You know, I remember back in the 90s, we in the corrugated industry, to make the glue, you use a caustic acid as a very little part of your glue making process. It's more of a heating thing. And the one year it got very cheap, and I was like to the sales guy, hey, it always goes up in the wintertime by almost 70% in cost. You didn't change your price. And he's like, oh, no, we got something new we're doing. I'm like, okay, what's the new thing you're doing? He's like, we put it all the, because bleach is basically a byproduct. When you're making caustic, you end up with bleach, which people use as chlorine during the summertime. Well, during the wintertime, when there's not many pools open, they were just putting this stuff on boats, shipping it to Africa, where they had like a 5-mile by 5-mile lake, and they were just pumping it into this lake and just letting it sit there. And I was like, wow, talk about killing the environment, guys. Oh, my God.
That doesn't sound good.
No, but it was cost effective for the company. So unfortunately, a lot of these big companies and a lot of government stuff, they really don't care what the end result is as long as they're making their money from it. So that's why they need these watchdog groups to say, hey, where's all that going? And following trucks. That's the thing that happened with, we got involved with the lithium battery industry. A guy called here one day back in 2019, and his name is Guy. And he said to one of my sales ladies, he says, hey, I want to buy two of those corrugated crates that are stronger than wood, but a third of the weight. And she's like, okay, give me a size. He goes, I don't care. I invented this paint, and I'm just going to paint them, and then we're going to try to light them on fire. And if they don't light on fire, we're going to ship lithium batteries in them. And so she called me, and she goes, I think this guy's a kook. Why don't you give him a call? So I called him, and I'm like, Guy, what are we doing? He's like, well, 1 out of 10 cargo ships come in here from Asia filled with lithium batteries in at least 100 of the containers catches fire, and there's no way to put it out. So these boats, because they know the container will burn so hot it'll go through the floor of the boat and sink the boat, they pick it up and they throw it in the ocean and keep on sailing. I'm like, what? He goes, oh, yeah, it's happened in 1 out of 10 ships. But now I'm going to call them PETA because I don't know their proper name. But they started following these boats, and they started reporting every time they seen a container dumped in the water. And now they had to bring these boats here. So real quickly, within like 4 months, the Coast Guard stepped in and said, whoa, what's going on? Now, you know, we haven't had a cargo container fire in a port in like years. All of a sudden, we got like 8 in the last 4 months. What's going on? And the shipping companies are like, well, we used to dump them in the ocean so that we didn't bring them in burning, because you can't put them out. So now we have to bring them in. And then it hit a head when down in Norfolk, Virginia, they had a fire in a container, and the fireman went. He didn't see lithium on the manifest. They just put batteries. The poor guy went to open the door. It blew him 240 foot in the air and killed him. And then the Coast Guard was like, hold on. These lithium batteries are starting to be a problem. What's going on? And everybody started looking into it, and they're like, wow, I had no idea these things were so volatile, so deadly. And then we ended up getting a special permit from the DOT. You can take these batteries at the end of life, even if they're the damaged, defective ones where you got the swelling and the craziness about to happen. You put them in a wrap of our paper, put them in a box that's lined with our paper, label it up, and you can ship them anywhere in the continental U.S. or North America to a recycler. They get it. They know how to handle it. Break it all down. Take our box at the end of life. They can either recycle it into a corrugated dumpster, or they can fold them flat in a lot of cases and ship them back to the sender. And the sender reuses them, you know, over and over until there's a problem where there's a crack or, you know, a slice in the box. And then they get a new box and move on with their life.
They reuse the box where you shipped these volatile batteries?
Yeah. Yeah. If there was no event, all they simply have to do is cut the tape off and send it back, and the people can use it back and forth. That's a big thing with like our industry, our crating. If you use a wooden crate, most likely it's going to cost you so much to bring it back to the person again and again that the freight cost outweighs the goodness. With our crating being out of corrugated, you can fold it after it gets done being used. You fold the sidewalls back inside, put the lid back on, you stack them up 8 high, put a shipping label on them, and send them all the way back to the person who's doing the recycling. And then they just keep doing that. Like, we have some crates that people have been using since 2009, and they're still using them today.
What are they made of?
They're made of corrugated. So corrugated is when you see the two pieces of paper with the ridge in the middle. That's what gives it its strength. So we'll use what's called a triple wall corrugator, where it's 3 layers of those ridges with 5 layers of paper, and it gives it the strength. So you can make one of our crates, put in, you know, 1,000 pounds, 2,000 pounds, 10,000 pounds, whatever you're going to put in there, and you can put another 4,000 to 5,000 pounds on top of it. So the stuff inside doesn't know that it's even driving down the road, because it's not a reverberator, where corrugated eats energy. So if you hit the side of the box, or the forklift hits it, or it's bouncing around in the truck, the corrugated eats up the energy. So the item inside has no clue it's driving. If you put it in a wooden crate, just a simple truck going down the road and just your normal vibration is like 9 G's of force. That will go right through the wood, go to your product, and then it starts rattling around inside your product looking for something to break. Like a glass, you know, computer shield on there, or that little wire solders inside will break. And then it gets to the other end, the machine doesn't work. Well, in our crating, like, we have customers who were losing 2 to 3 crates every month, or 2 to 3 products every month out of like 50 they shipped. They put them in our crating out of corrugated. They haven't lost a single one since 2009 when they came, you know, to us.
And they're lightweight.
The energy.
Sorry.
Yeah, when you're shipping them, mm-hmm. they're 1/3 of the weight of a wooden crate.
What is the original source material for that?
Corrugated. It's all
Before it's
corrugated.
corrugated, where does it come from?
Oh, it's nowadays 60% of it comes from recycled paper. The other 30% comes from trees. And most of these mills, for every one tree they take down to make paper, they plant three more. They're very green friendly, they're very environmentally friendly. And their paper mills that when they're making them, they're zero discharge. They're literally used, like when they take a tree, they got to strip the bark off. And then they start grinding it up to be made into this pulp. Well, the bark becomes energy going into the boilers to make the steam that they need to, heat the stuff up to make it into a new roll of paper.
And so it's mostly clean, is what I'm hearing you say. It stays green because you're using 60% recyclable, and then the mills themselves are planting new trees whenever they take a tree down.
Yeah, the paper industry, from my experiences, is basically one of the cleaner industries I've ever seen. So they put a lot of pressure on themselves back in the 1990s and 2000 to keep coming up with cleaner, recyclable, and zero emission stuff because they wanted to be ahead of everything. And, nobody wants to go home and know that you're destroying the environment.
Well, there were some cities, Jacksonville comes to mind, that they said you could smell the city before you arrived because of the paper mills nearby.
Yeah, we call that making money because that's the only byproduct is the odor. So it basically, as these cooling towers and everything are letting out, that's what you smell. You smell the smell of the paper. And I call it basically a septic smell. So I know Fernandina Beach down there's a large mill. I used to go there and do training there every year. And as long as the wind was blowing offshore, you had no clue there was even a paper mill 40 feet from you. But as soon as you got a front where the wind was blowing onshore, it was a completely different animal.
How much of a pollutant is that? Is that carcinogenic, for example?
No. It's just basically if you ever take some wood and you sour it down, it's that smell that comes off of the wood and the pulp that's in there. So it's not going to hurt anybody. You could be breathing it direct. You're going to be fine. From what I know, I spent a lot of years in the paper industry and never saw anybody harmed.
What other items from a regular household or even a regular business do people need to be aware of to separate outside of the items that we've talked about right now, the lithium ion batteries, the plastic, glass? Is glass always recyclable? Are there any glass items that you shouldn't put in the recycling bin?
No, I think glass is 100% recyclable. Again, just make sure you're putting it in clean so they're not dealing with, whatever's inside of it. Paints, if you got paints or and a big one too, if you got pharmaceuticals in your house that are just old and you got to get rid of them,
You mean like prescription meds?
do not flush them down the toilets. Talk to your county. They generally have nowadays. Every county has a prescription day where you can just drop all these things off and they'll take them and dispose of them properly. Because what happens with a lot of these meds is the chemicals that are used in them, at the when your toilet flushes and it goes downtown to be to be cleaned up, the water, there's these microorganisms in there. We call them bugs. And as long as the chemical reaction in that tank stays pretty even, the bugs are fine. Well, if you dump in these drugs and everything, all the pHs change a lot. And when you change those pHs, if you kill the bugs, there's nothing in there to basically eat the bacteria and clear the water. So the municipalities sometimes will have to start putting this stuff in trucks and sending it to places to try to clean it up before they can do what they need to do. if you know, your old chemicals, your towns should have a recycling day at least once a month where you can take all these quarter bottles, half bottles, and take it to them, and then they'll have a company that takes it and goes, okay, these ones all should go over here, and they can go back to a chemical plant and be mixed in to make some other type of thing, or these ones, you know, just never put the stuff down the drain if you don't have to. Get it to the proper authorities. Every town's got an eye on this stuff because they know what it does. If you kill the bugs at the septic plant, it can cost them $100,000 to get it re-going again the proper way.
Does that extend to things like cough drops or cough syrup or just over-the-counter meds, or is this just for prescription meds?
No, if you're trying to get rid of it in bulk, you know, if you got one cough drop, put it in a trash can. I don't think it's going to hurt anything. But if you're dumping it, you know, if you're cleaning out of the house and you're dumping, you know, bags full of this stuff in there, ask the question of the county or the town, and they'll be able to tell you, you know, whether it's safe or not.
What about oil? Like cooking oil?
So I own a restaurant as one of my businesses, and there's all these companies that make this biodiesel. They actually, for a 55-gallon drum, which we create every 2 weeks of the cooking oils, they pay you like $16, and they come and pick it up and take it away, and they take it to these factories, and they just blend it down and take out the impurities, like the chunks of bacon or whatever. And there's a huge company here, the Supreme Industries. They just build a plant that can go around and collect all like your unwanted food. For like restaurants that have stuff that rotted and they want, instead of throwing it in a dumpster, they can get it to these guys and they take it and turn it into energy in a trash to steam plant. You know, so there's a lot of ways because we're very conscious of it. You just have to ask the right people. And usually your county officials know who to give you a number to contact.
If you fry something, say you did a fried turkey for Thanksgiving, since that's recent in our memory.
Yep.
That's probably a lot of oil because it depends on the weight of the bird, the amount of oil that you have to put in there.
Right.
Is that the kind of thing that you need to find someone to take it, or can you put it in
usually
the garbage?
I would say not in the garbage because all that stuff's going to do is go back into the ground at the, you know, dump. But I know years ago, I was at the recycle center down in Delaware where we lived, and they had these big, like 200-gallon pads, and it just said, dispose of old oil here. And you just come up with your container, dump it all in, and then they take it and they, you know, sell it to a company who basically works it down and makes this biodiesel that a lot of vehicles are now running on.
If you have a large quantity of oil, set it aside is what I'm hearing you say.
Yes, and then just contact your town. They'll tell you where to take it to. There's probably a collection center within like 15 minutes of your home. Take it there, dump it in, and then dispose of the container properly.
What recycling tips would you share with our listeners if they want to know more, or if there's, say, three things that people can remember about safety when recycling, what would you share?
If you're not sure, contact your local area government and ask them a question about the item. Don't put it into the recycling thing if you already think it's dangerous, like a lithium battery, because somebody has to deal with that at the other end of its life, and you want it to be somebody who knows what they're doing. And just always look at the thing and think to yourself, is that going to go away? Like plastic is not going away. It's going to be sitting in that landfill for the next 100 years, and it isn't even going to change.
There's a lot of misinformation out there. Is there a source or sources of unbiased, non-political, non-denominational information where people can go and trust that the information they get regarding recycling is trustworthy?
That's a great question. The only thing I know to do is I usually call my local municipality, and they tell me what they have. You're right. You look online, you never know who's putting out the information. But there are some really long-term people like the DEP. You know, they have a lot of, you know, that's all they do is basically environmental stuff. So they have a lot of good advice on their sites that tell you what to do with stuff or give you contacts for who's in your local area to talk to about it.
Well, and the challenge these days is it's difficult to get anybody on the phone. Anywhere you call, if you can get a phone number, you get a voicemail or a phone tree.
Yeah, and you have to do it online. Most of these places have a section where you can send in your question online. And then, you know, they got a robot set up to give you the simple answers. Or otherwise, they'll have somebody contact you back.
What about listeners who want to know more about this new technology your company has developed that you can use to wrap around these explosive devices? Is this available to the general public?
Yes. If they go on to our PACWW.com, they'll be able to see the ThermoShield page, and it'll bring you into the TR sleeve and everything, and it'll ask you if you want a person to give you a call, and we'll have a person give you a call.
What is the price range, or what's the starting point of affordability for these items?
For a company that wanted to wrap a single cell, it's about 3.5 cents. So, like, if they were to do an entire inside of a car to make it safe so there was never a fire again, it'd probably cost them under $600. If it's just a person trying to use one of our kits to ship something, they really need to, like, every store that sells you these items has a recycling center somewhere in it. And they take them and they put them into safety kits. We sell a lot of kits to all different the municipalities, and you put your stuff in the dumpsters, they take it, they sort it, they put the dangerous batteries in our boxes and our paper, and they send it to the right people. So you shouldn't have to take a lot of time. Just ask the people who sold it to you, ask the town, and take it to the proper people. Put it in their bin.
Would you share a conflict of interest statement with us?
Yes.
Who do you represent for purposes of our discussion today?
Packaging and Creating Technologies.
Has anybody, any third party compensating you to speak on their behalf?
No.
Roger, thank you for joining us from Connecticut.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me on. I appreciate it.
And to our audience, you have been listening to Roger Mort, who is COO of Packaging and Crating Technologies, who discussed safe recycling tips. To propose a guest for the show, you can email me directly at editor@hispanicmpr.com. That's editor@hispanicmpr.com.